And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser, and it's Thursday, August 8th, and it's the top of the hour. It's 3 p.m. We have a great Juno Afternoon lined up for you today. We'll talk with Jordan Nigro from SAIL about their organization as well as their upcoming whale watch and wine tasting event. A good year to watch some whales. We'll talk to Vince O'Shea from the Pacific Seafood Processors Association about his organization and what he's doing up here in Alaska. And as with every Thursday, we'll talk to Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, music, and more here on Juno Afternoon. And first off, let's get started with a little National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, an inquest began this week seeking answers about the death of a homeless Aboriginal man. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Brian Sinclair died a few years ago in an emergency room after waiting hours for help.
The inquest will look at what happened between the time the 45-year-old Sinclair came to the emergency department and the discovery of his death 34 hours later. Sinclair was a double amputee. He was in a wheelchair when he went to the emergency department at Winnipeg's Health Sciences Center in September of 2008. Security footage shows him speaking to an aide before he wheeled himself into the waiting room. Almost a day and a half later, another person in the waiting room told security Sinclair appeared to be dead. He had a bladder infection that could have been treated. Emily Hill is a staff lawyer with Aboriginal Legal Services in Toronto.
We need to hear about why were there assumptions made about Mr. Sinclair and why he was there. Why did he fall through the cracks? How could this have happened in a big urban center with a well-equipped emergency room that is there to meet the needs of the most vulnerable?
Police investigated Sinclair's death but decided no charges were warranted. The Regional Health Authority paid $110,000 in damages to the Sinclair family, and the hospital made changes to the waiting room and how it processes emergency patients. Manitoba's chief medical officer told the inquest that race did not play a role in Sinclair's death, adding that Snow White would have received the same treatment. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Kiowa people are concerned about development at a site in Oklahoma. As KGOU's Susan Shannon reports, it's used for ceremonies and gathering cedar.
Dried flat-leaf cedar is used in Native American ceremonies across Indian country. Many compare it to the incense used in Catholic Church. The goal is the same, to cleanse, to honor, to make pleasing to God. Phil R. Joefish DuPoint, tribal historian at the Kiowa Tribal Museum and a member of the Native American Church, says the cedar is special on Longhorn Mountain in Oklahoma.
It has its own specific, unique fragrance. I mean, I've been throughout the United States, been in different parts of Canada, and I've smelled or witnessed different traditional things that other tribes did, and they use their cedar. But Longhorn just has its own unique scent. No other place in the world can you get it but here.
Longhorn Mountain passed out of Indian hands and was bought by non-natives. Even the mountain itself was split up with different owners. One owner honors the verbal agreement to allow the Kiowas to continue their traditions, but the other owner has leased out half the mountain to a gravel company. DuPoint fears the dust from blasting will harm the cedar. With no legal leg to stand on, the Kiowa tribe will have to take their grievances to the court of public opinion. For National Native News, I'm Susan Shannon in Norman, Oklahoma.
The Native American Journalists Association and the Native Health News Alliance recently partnered to increase coverage of health issues in Indian country. National Native News intern Polly Dinetclaw has more.
Two Native journalists created the online Native Health News Alliance last year. They wanted to enhance news coverage on health-related issues of Indigenous people. Rhonda Lavaldo is the former president of the Native American Journalists Association. She was one of the Health Alliance founders and helped raise money for the project.
We want our nations to be healthier. We want them living longer or having all sorts of heart disease, diabetes, you know, all sorts of problems affecting our people. And so we need to make sure we're living healthier lifestyles.
The W.K. Kellogg Foundation provided a more than $150,000 grant for the project. The project includes offering prepackaged background information to reporters on Native American health issues. I'm Polly Dinetqua.
During this week in 2012, television news director Jason Vincent resigned after posting a controversial Facebook comment. It read, add drunk homeless Native American man to the list of animals that have wandered into my yard. Benson apologized, and his Duluth, Minnesota Fox affiliate said he took another assignment. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser, and in the studio with me right now, I have Jordan Nigro from Sales. She's the deputy director. Thanks so much for coming to talk with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. So I wanted to start off. We have this whale. You'll have a whale watch and wine tasting fundraiser coming up.
We do.
And what's the information on that?
So next Thursday, a week from today, from 5:30 to 8:30, Allen Marine has donated a cruise to us, which we're super excited about. And so Odom Corporation is doing a wine tasting for us, and Tom Loker is going to play piano, and hopefully there will be lots of wildlife. And so it's a three-hour cruise and $60, and you can get tickets online at www.sailinc.org.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great. So can you give us kind of I know SAIL does so much, but can you give us an overview of what SAIL does for this community and with this community?
Sure. So SAIL is an independent living center, and there are independent living centers across the country. And we're a private nonprofit, and SAIL stands for Southeast Alaska Independent Living. We have offices in Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Haines, and then we do outreach throughout Southeast to the smaller communities. SAIL really, you know, we work with people with disabilities and seniors of any age or in any disability to help them to be more independent in their life. And that can look very different for different people. Some people might come into us because they're having trouble getting in and out of their shower because it's not accessible. And as they age, they can't do it anymore. And we can help them with home modifications to get that set up. Someone else might come in because they're having trouble reading their mail because they can't see quite like they used to be able to. We also work with youth with our outdoor recreation program, and we can also help youth to get connected in schools if there's an assistive technology that they need. We help with that sometimes too. So it really looks different for everybody, but whatever you need to be more independent and have your life be how you want it to be, we will try to help you get there.
That's great. And so as far as some of those programs, I've seen the outdoor program, I believe, for youth, and I've maybe seen some adult outdoor programs.
Outdoor recreation, our outdoor rec program works with youth and adults and seniors doing all sorts of things. ORCA is probably our most visible program because they're out in the community all the time, kayaking or hiking or skiing. A lot of people have seen us up at Eagle Crest. And so that program is just constantly doing things and out in the community and working with folks of all ages. And then SAIL, where our main office is here in Juneau, is over at Hospital Drive, and people come to us with, you know, concerns, and we can help with benefits planning. You know, if somebody is, you know, realizing that they can't work anymore and they need to get on Social Security, we can help them with that. Lots of different stuff. So a lot of stuff happens out of there too. And we also go into people's homes sometimes and meet them there and help them with things.
So how many people in Juneau do you serve annually?
We serve in Juneau annually about 700 people, I believe.
And what is your staff, you know, what kind of support staff do you have? Because I know you all have a lot of people are highly trained to help people out.
So we have, SAIL is an Aging and Disability Resource Center. So we have our Aging and Disability Resource Center coordinator. And then we also have everybody, we consider all of ourselves independent living advocates. So everybody kind of has that title in their job because that's what we're doing, is advocating for people to be independent. And so everybody's trained in different things. And one of the, we have one person here on staff who really works specifically with benefits, as I was just saying, and works and to get people onto benefits. If they're having trouble understanding their benefits, he can help them with that. He does a lot of helping people sort of navigate the confusing system that is is getting on, getting services that you need. So, because it's not always as easy as people sometimes, I think, believe it to be.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so, as far as you said, there's other offices in Southeast as well. And so, what is your involvement in that as far as Juneau goes?
So, Juneau is our main office, and the other offices we sort of consider satellite offices. We have two staff in our Ketchikan office, we have two staff in our Sitka office, and we have two staff in Haines.
Okay. And if people wanted some more information as far as they're looking for services themselves, where can they get more information?
They can call us at the Juneau office at 586-4920, and we can connect you with any of our other offices. You can also go onto our website, which is saleinc.org, and you can send us a message from there and just check it out. There's lots of information about what we do there.
That's great. And then I've also wondered, too, do you look for volunteers? I work for a nonprofit and work, we're constantly, you know. And how can people get involved that way? And in what way could they help?
Well, you know, the main program that we have volunteers help with is our ORCA program. You know, you see all the skiing happening in the winter. Well,
that's
that
so
could
incredible.
Not. Yeah. And that could not happen without volunteers. It really, volunteers are a huge part of that program. So you can just call that same number, 586-4920. And if you're interested in volunteering with ORCA, you can just let us know and we'll get you connected. We use volunteers year round for that program, but for the ski program is probably the biggest time. The other time that we need volunteers is usually during Only Fools Run at Midnight, which just happened last month, or I guess it's August now, so the month before last. and then we have this fall a big fundraiser, which is on October 11th, and sometimes we can use volunteers for that. That is our annual dinner and auction.
Okay. And so, you know, you said Only Fools Run at Midnight. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that throughout the course of a calendar year, you have a lot of opportunities for people to actually donate financially.
Mm-hmm.
And so what kind of, other than this upcoming fundraiser, what other kind of fundraisers do you all have?
So the biggest thing that we have coming up that actually we just had our first planning meeting for today is our dinner and auction, which is on October 11th this year. It's at Centennial Hall. We're just kind of getting the program sorted out, so I can't really tell you anything super exciting about it right now. But I will tell you that, you know, we do it every year, and it is really fun, and you learn a lot about SAIL and what we do there. And everybody, you know, we're so fortunate to have so many community members who donate to us and help make the auction really successful. And so it's always a really fun night, and there's always great stuff to bid on. So save the date, October 11th. That will be coming up.
Great, great.
And then I think then we're kind of out of fundraising season a little as far as events go. Our two big events are the auction and Only Fools Run at Midnight. And then we have two cruises in the summer. One of them already happened, and then this one is the wine tasting. So, but you can donate to SAIL anytime on our website at saleinc.org, or you can call us, or you can drop by. We love to see people, and we always like to, you know, have an idea of what encouraged people to donate to us. So if you do, feel free to write a little note of why you're doing it, and we might follow up with you and put you in our donor newsletter or something like that.
That's great. And so can you, you know, I love watching this event, but can you tell everybody, for people who don't know, what Only Fools Run at Midnight? Because it's just too much fun.
Because it is kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
So every year we do this Only Fools Run at Midnight, and that is exactly what it is. People run at midnight, and they dress up in costume. Well, a lot of them do. Not everybody does, but many, many people do. And
a
I will
lot
tell
of
you
people.
That this year, I think that the sunshine really motivated people to dress up. We had some great costumes this year, and it wasn't raining, so people didn't come back from the race with their cardboard costume disintegrating around them, you know. it was awesome. And we usually have anywhere between 500 to 700 people turn out. We had over 600 this year, so that was great. It was great. And then that's a big fundraiser for us and a lot of fun.
Right. And so you said you already did one of these wine tastings slash
this was the,
whale
what
watching.
We already did was just a cruise. We do just a whale watching cruise, and then we do one of the cruises as a wine tasting. So the one that already happened, that happens usually around Mother's Day, and it's just a wildlife cruise.
Oh, that's great. And so as far as this one's coming up, can you give us the details one more time?
Yeah.
And then do you know any, you know, I'm kind of a wine geek, I'm not going to lie. Do you know any of the wines that people might be tasting? Or?
Well, I don't know because actually I haven't checked in with them. I was just there on my list today of kind of getting more details. But I will tell you that last year they brought... we did this last year, and it was very successful. We filled the boat. People had a great time. The whales were great, and the wine was great, and there were snacks too. We put out some appetizers, and I believe they had like 3 or 4 different reds, and then same with some whites. And this year, we will make sure that there is a non-alcoholic option. We forgot to do that last year. For anybody listening that goes, oh, but last year there weren't. We will make sure this year that we have that. So, at any rate, it was great fun, and the folks that come from Odom Corporation are awesome and really make it a good time. And you know, it's just so nice to get out on the water all the time, and we don't often get the chance. And if you have folks visiting in town, for $60 for a 3-hour wine
total score
tasting, it's a pretty good deal. So, and all the proceeds go to sale.
So you get to watch whales, bubble net feeding. Katie B said they're just going crazy lately, so that's fabulous. And
oh, I hope so.
Yeah, I know, right? You can watch whales and you can donate to a fabulous cause, really, at the same time. Yeah. Well, can you give us a website for one more time where people can get information?
The tickets are available at sailinc.org, or you can give us a call at 586-4920, and it's next Thursday from 5:30 to 8:30.
Great. Jordan Negro, thank you so much for coming to talk with us about SAIL and the upcoming whale watching tour.
Thank you.
And that's the Beatles with If I Needed Someone. My name is Shona Strasser. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on Thursday, August 8th. And next up in the studio with me, I have Vince O'Shea, the Vice President for Alaska of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. Thanks so much for joining me in the studio today.
Well, thanks, Shona. It's great to be here, and it's great to be back in Juneau.
Yeah, so you, can you, for those of, you know, people like me, or like Pacific Seafood Processors Association, what is the organization?
Sure. I'm going to say PSPA.
Perfect.
For our organization. It was actually founded in 1914, so next year will be our 100th year as an organization. We're a trade organization of 9 companies that buy and process seafood in Alaska. There's more than 100 fish processing plants in Alaska, but our members operate a little bit more than 20 of those plants, and collectively they buy and process 70% of all the seafood landed in Alaska. So they're the major companies that are in Alaska.
Wow, yeah. And so what is your role in this?
So the purpose of our association is to represent our members on public policy issues regarding both the state, the legislature, the executive branch of the state government, as well as NOAA, the North Pacific Council. And we also have an office back in Washington, D.C., that represents our members on issues before Congress and government agencies back in D.C. So we're not a marketing organization. We don't do that type of thing, but we do public policy affecting our members.
And what are some of the kind of hot button items that are happening right now?
Well, I think maybe to set the table for that question, one of the big issues is for everybody to realize that, and I think people in Juneau certainly do, that Alaska produces more than 52% of all the seafood produced in the United States. So Alaska is a major player in seafood. And then that translates within our state to be the third largest revenue generator in the state of Alaska. Oil and gas are first, the federal government, revenues from the federal government are second, and the seafood industry is third. Last year, that accounted for $1.9 billion ex-vessel. That's what the fishermen got when they landed their fish. And after that product left the processors, it was worth $4.5 billion. So I'll put a plug in for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. That's a state agency that's funded by dollars from both the state government as well as the industry. And they've done a terrific job of enhancing the marketing of Alaska seafood, establishing the brand, and raising the value that the harvesters and the processors get for that product. So with that in mind, I think the other issue that's around right now is Alaska seafood is not only the highest quality in the world, but it's also the best managed in the world. And it's managed on a sustainable basis. And there have been some recent challenges to that claim. And PSPA members, and I think the rest of the industry, are very grateful for Governor Parnell, as well as our congressional delegation back east, have weighed in on this issue to clarify and make clear to everybody of how important sustainability is to the management of Alaskan fisheries, and the fact that that's the way these resources are being managed in Alaska. The other thing that I think is exciting to me, it's been 20 years I was here in the state in the Coast Guard years ago, but I just came back from a trip in Bristol Bay, and of course that was the tail end of the sockeye harvest. And while the commercial harvest fell short of what the prediction was, I think there's a lot of excitement about what the base offered price is this year, and it was substantially higher than what folks thought it was going to be. And I think that reflects the investment that our members have made in processing equipment and the good job the state of Alaska legislature has done in creating a tax incentive, tax credit program to encourage that investment. And years ago, you go into our plants and salmon were basically going into cans. Now there's a wide variety of terrific products being produced in those plants. So I saw some beautiful sockeye fillets. You can see the fish come in one end of the plant, and you can see these beautiful vacuum-packed, not a bone in them, brilliant red plastic-packaged salmon that were being quick flash frozen. And these are fish that have stayed in ice almost from the minute they came aboard the vessel all the way through the processing thing. All that equipment, Shona, to do that was invested by our companies and fishermen, and a lot of it was encouraged by the legislature through the product development. That bill is up for reauthorization extension this year, and I'm happy to say that Representative Curtula has joined Bryce Edgman as well as Alan Osterman in co-sponsoring that bill. So that's good news for the industry and a great investment, I think. I think the other point that sometimes doesn't really get understood by folks is that, you know, our fisheries resources, both in the state waters as well and federal waters, it's a public resource and they belong to everybody. And one of the reasons I took this job with PSPA is because the processors, along with the harvesters, provide a very important role in providing the public access to these public resources. Not everybody has the means or the ability, or in my case, the skill, to go out and catch fish on their own.
Right. So what do you mean? Can you break that down for us? So what are the public resources available?
So what it means is you and I can go to a store and buy our fish. So we don't have to worry about catching our fish. And I think a lot of times the commercial side doesn't get enough credit for the role that they play in that process. Some people will have us believe that the commercial industry exclusively gets the fish for their own use, and in fact that use goes far wider than the commercial harvesters. They in turn turn those fish over and make them available to the public. Now, I love sport fishing. I know a lot of people make their living guiding on sport fishing trips. A lot of people enjoy recreational fishing. But I saw right before I came in the studio, I saw a little number from Linden Transport, and they move a couple of years ago. Jim Jansen gave a speech, and he mentioned that he moves 5,000 containers packed with Alaskan seafood a year, and he's one of three companies doing that. So it's a huge volume, and we're feeding people not only in the United States but all over the world with this terrific product that comes out of Alaska, and I think. The other part is that our members at PSPA have invested hundreds of millions of dollars here in Alaska in the plants. We've been here for a long time. With that kind of investment, we want to be here well into the future. So for that reason, we are very supportive of the Department of Fish and Game. We're very supportive of their budget, and we think it's very important that they get the money to do the science that's necessary to guide management, that they get the funds to do the assessments, to collect the data needed for proper management. And I think the magic of this whole industry is that if we take proper care of our fishery resources, they come back every single year, not only for us to enjoy into the future, but for future generations. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind.
So as far as kind of the public listening to, you know, what PSPA actually does and, you know, figuring that piece out, it's a group of companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what is your prime duty is to advocate for sustainable fisheries, or what is, you know?
Well, it's all of those things. So, for example, one of the things that I was excited about in the legislature is the legislature has shifted quite a bit because of the population growth in Alaska. And we have a lot of legislators that aren't from coastal communities. And years ago, the coastal communities had quite a bit of political presence within the legislature, and they were represented by folks that had grown up in those villages and understood the fishing industry. Now, that's not necessarily true anymore. We have legislators from urban areas, and even though, like in Anchorage, for example, there's a large number of Bristol Bay permit holders that actually live in the Anchorage-Matsu area, those folks, legislators, don't necessarily have the same exposure to the industry and the importance of our plants in the rural communities. So one of the jobs is just being a credible source of information to those folks, so that as they go about doing different things, they understand what the impacts are. My pitch is also that I think it's wise for Alaska in general to invest in the seafood industry and to invest in a vibrant industry, because that economic activity will ensure those coastal communities are self-sufficient. And that if you lose the plants in a particular town, and you can travel all over Alaska and you can see the remnants of canneries and salt trees and other business endeavors that have gone out of business. If you lose that activity within the town's at jeopardy of survival, and it either then needs to have a subsidy, direct subsidy from the state, or it eventually people will move away because there's no employment there. I would argue that it's cheaper in the long run to invest modestly up front and keep that business going so those communities can stay self-sufficient. So that's one way we work on things. The other is in the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. For example, that's the federal group that is responsible for setting the management of fisheries in federal waters. Well, we have interest in ensuring that the shore-based industry, the shore-based side, which is in competition with the at-sea processing side, that's a balanced approach, and that the needs of our members and our harvesters are taken into account in the management plan. So that's a couple of examples of the types of things that we do, Shauna.
That's great. And if people wanted to get some more information, you know, about fisheries, they want to get more information about Pacific Seafood Processors Association, PSPA for short, where would they go?
Well, I can give three. That's a great question. I can give you three really good sources. First of all, the first one I'm going to blurt out is ASME. And even though we're a member, PSPA is a member of ASME and our member companies are members of ASME, but the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has a terrific website. And they have a lot of information there that would be my first go-to for the average person. Because what we want to know about is what kind of fish there are, recipes, and information about the industry itself. Mm-hmm. And that would be at alaskaseafood.org is the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And they're really dedicated, great people over there. Our website is pspafish.org. .net. It's a little bit smaller one, but I'd also encourage folks to Google just the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. They're up in Anchorage, and they have a terrific webpage that's just a link to all the federal fishery management plans. And of course, folks can go to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website to get insight into the state management plans. I think those four websites would keep people busy all through the winter.
It's so true. So as far as, ways, you said that this bill coming up soon. Can you give us what the bill number is?
Right now it's House Bill 204, mm-hmm. and it basically is going to take the provisions that are in the existing bill, roll them over. There's some modifications in there to allow credit for equipment to can herring and to also develop fish powder. There's folks that are working on that bill that believe there's a market in underdeveloped countries for the fish powder. And actually, they wouldn't be selling the fish powder to the countries, but they would be selling it to U.S. foreign aid programs that are trying to increase the protein of people's diets in underdeveloped and needy countries. So there's a few minor tweaks in the bill, but it basically allows companies to take credit, a tax credit, for buying equipment that enhances the value of salmon products. So, you know, one of the great things I told you about the price up in Bristol Bay, the strong price. When I was up there, I mean, one particular processing plant was offering a premium price for bled, refrigerated saltwater salmon. And I think at the time it was maybe 22 cents a pound more than what had been, what the flat rate was. So additional equipment, that credit had been used in the past for additional equipment, ice-making equipment by the plants, which then made it easier for them to get ice out to the fleet.
Mm-hmm. And so, okay, yeah. And are there any other bills that kind of coming
up that people should be aware of, or?
Well, there's, you know, in any given session, there's a, you know, a long list of fisheries related bills, but the ones that, you know, that they're not necessarily ones that would track back to the to the processors. In some cases, where we don't have a direct interest, our general position is to is sort of let others decide, you know, how to solve and deal with those issues.
Great. Well, Vince O'Shea, thank you so very much from the Pacific Seafood Processors Association to talk to us about so many things that actually, you know, a lot of us here kind of take for granted. We actually don't really know. You know, we know that we catch fish and we eat fish and we love it, but there's a lot that goes on. Yeah.
There is. This is a fascinating business, and I think anybody that lives in Juneau just has to walk around and look at the docks. There's over 772 commercial fishing boats tied up in Juneau. And because they're spread out between Auk Bay and downtown and over in Douglas, I think folks don't even realize that. But if you take Southeast, if you take the combined ports of Southeast, you know, so you take Sitka and Petersburg and Wrangell and Juneau, if you were able to lump those all together, it would put Southeast Alaska would be up in the probably in the top 15 fishing ports in the whole United States because of that.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Quite amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming into the studio and talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me. This has been great.
Thank you. And coming up next, we have Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 8th of August, 2013. It's the birthday of Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings, born in Washington, D.C., on this day in 1896. She's best known for her book, The Yearling, which was the best-selling novel in America in 1938, and it won the Pulitzer Prize the following year. The Yearling is about an adolescent boy in rural Florida who adopts an orphaned baby deer named Flag, becomes really close to the deer, and then in the end has to shoot Flag because it's eating all the family's crops. And it's the anniversary of the end of one of the truly last happy periods in the life of John Keats. It was on this day in 1818 that Keats finished a long walking tour through northern England, Ireland, and Scotland. Keats was 23 years old. He'd planned to become a surgeon, but he realized his real vocation was poetry. And in the spring of 1818, he published his first major long poem, Endymion. And then he set out on a hike through the countryside with his friend Charles Brown. Wordsworth had been inspired by walking around England, so Keats decided to do the same that summer. But Keats was a London boy. He had never seen the mountains. He had never seen a waterfall. He wrote letters back to his brother about the wonderful things that he saw. But gradually, on his hike, he realized he was no Wordsworth, that he did not want to write about scenery. He was more interested in the people whom he saw along the way. He was fascinated by the peasants who walked barefoot on the roads, carrying their shoes and stockings so they would look nice when they got to town. He once saw an old woman being carried along the road in a kind of cage, like a dog kennel, smoking a pipe. He came back to London and learned that the reviews of Endymion were coming in, and critics had written ferocious attacks against him. He was crushed. And his brother had come down with a serious case of tuberculosis. His brother died in December, and by the end of that year, John Keats had contracted tuberculosis himself. He would die 3 years later, in 1821. It was in those last 3 years of his life that he wrote most of his greatest poems, including the six great odes that he is known for, all written in Keats's amazing year, 1819. On this date in 1929, the Graf Zeppelin airship took off from Lakehurst, New Jersey, on a round-the-world flight. It was the first such flight by a passenger aircraft. Graf Zeppelin had a remarkable 9-year career. Before its round-the-world trip, it was also the first commercial passenger flight across the Atlantic Ocean. It flew more than 1 million miles, safely carried 34,000 passengers, and flew a scientific mission over the North Pole. But the age of the giant dirigibles came to an end in 1937 when Graf Zeppelin's sister ship, the Hindenburg, went up in flames. And here's a poem by Robert Creeley, Wild Nights, Wild Nights. It seemed your friend had finally others to attend. My time was yours alone to spend. I leaned against the fence and waited. Our love, I felt, was unequivocally fated. To go sans word would leave all still unstated. Hence, scurrying hopes and pledge at last. Now here, with all the fading years between, I wonder where time ever was before we walked in those towering woods beneath the ample clouds, bathed in that wondrous air. Wild Nights, Wild Nights, a poem by Robert Creeley from his collection If I Were Writing This, published by New Directions and used here by permission on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
Tonight on 360 North, it's Rain Country Reflections at 8, followed at 8:30 by the Alaska Film Archives television series. At 9, join Ann Sechrist and her guests on AARP Alaska. The Aviators follows at 9:30, and at 10, Faith in the Hood is a compelling portrait of an inner-city community seen through the prism of its people's diverse spiritual lives. It's all tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Support for this program comes from Balloons by Night Moods, providing Juneau with new, used, and consigned party goods. Balloons by Night Moods, located at 9342 Glacier Highway in the Valley. More info at 523-1099.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. This is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, August 8th. And before our next guest comes along, every Thursday it's Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up, which I absolutely love having her in the studio telling us about all the fabulous arts events going on. And speaking of fabulous arts events going on, tonight we are so lucky, actually in town today, is Trampled by Turtles. They're playing tonight. They're a fabulous band. Really excited that they're here. They're playing tonight at Centennial Hall. The local favorite, DNR, a rock band with doing originals and covers. They're really great. They're opening up for Trampled by Turtles. This is at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 8 p.m. The Beer Garden is a fundraiser for KXLL. The tickets for this event are $25. And this is just a not-to-be-missed event. It's one of those things. It's like there's very few times when fabulous bands come to town, and this is one of them. So check out Trampled by Turtles tonight at Centennial Hall. And I'll give you a little preview here of their music.
Heartbeat, I know the sound. It feels like
Trampled by Turtles, playing tonight at Centennial Hall. And doors open at 8 o'clock. Opening band, DNR, local Juno favorite. Tickets are $25, and the beer garden there is to support our local radio station, KXLL. And before we hear our last guest here on Juno Afternoon on this Thursday, August 8th, let's hear a little bit of Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. The emperor penguin, not only the largest penguin, but the deepest and longest underwater diver of any bird on the planet. The deepest dive ever recorded for an emperor penguin is 564 meters. The record duration is 27 minutes on a single breath. Biologist Jessica Meir traveled to Antarctica to study how they achieve these feats. She learned they can hold relatively more oxygen in their bodies than humans or other terrestrial animals, and they use that oxygen with incredible efficiency. Here's Jessica.
If you look at something as simple as heart rate, you can start understanding a lot about what's going on with that animal's physiology and oxygen usage during the dive.
Meir and her colleagues fitted emperor penguins with backpack recorders to measure their heart rate. At rest, the rate is about 70 beats per minute, similar to a human. But before and after plunging into icy water, it increases significantly, ramping up to effectively load oxygen. Then, when diving, the heart rate also takes a dramatic dive.
So in a long dive, which was about 18 minutes, we had a heart rate down to 3 beats per minute, and then around 6 beats per minute for a sustained 5-minute period. So very, very impressive.
She also measured the depletion of oxygen in the blood during the dive. If we can understand how emperor penguins tolerate such low levels of oxygen, we may someday apply that information in the operating room in situations when humans experience low levels of oxygen. You can find links to Meir's work at birdnote.org.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. This is Shona Strasser on this fine Thursday, August 8th. And in the studio with me, I have the lovely and always entertaining Nancy DeCherney talking to us about Arts Up, what's going on artistically, and, you know, we hear a lot of other things too, right?
We throw a few things in.
Yeah, yeah. So what's happened, Nancy?
Well, there's a few things happening. I heard there was going to be thunder showers tonight or today. So
like thunder, thunder?
Yeah, like thunder, thunder.
Wow.
Yeah, we like that. There's the Trampled by Turtles thing?
Yes, I really am excited about that.
That's this evening. You know, Contiki is showing at the Gold Town Nickelodeon these days. And there's a few other things. There's Guys and Dolls Junior. What do you know about that?
I know a lot about that. Kids doing some musical theater. It's really funny.
I love that. Is it all the usual songs from Guys and Dolls?
It's all the usual songs. Yes.
I love them all.
I
okay.
know. It's so good.
And that's at Perseverance Theater at 7:30. And while we're on the subject of Star, Friday is Cinderella at Perseverance. Now, which version of Cinderella is this?
Well, it's actually not the Disney version. It's a comedy. And that's why I love it, because it's really very, very funny. Like, the stepsisters are named Asphyxia and Euthanasia, which I think is, like,
lovely
awesome.
Names.
Yeah, it just makes me laugh. It's British comedy, so you know how they are.
One of those kind. So you have two opportunities to see that, Friday and Saturday?
Friday, and then there's two separate shows on Saturday, yeah.
Saturday, they've got King Lear at 2 and okay. Cinderella at 7:30. And then will you send Cinderella again at 2 on Sunday? Is that an incorrect thing?
That was last week.
Okay, so last week. Mm-hmm. All righty then. But which brings up the fact that you should go see these before they're all gone.
Yeah.
And you can get tickets at the usual places. So we got through Thursday. Friday is Salmon Derby.
Yes, it is.
Which is a show in and of itself, actually.
Yes, it is. Go to the boat launch. You'll be highly entertained.
It's lots of fun. You know, it's 67th annual Golden Horse Salmon Derby scholarships. This is an amazing community effort.
It's huge.
Does a lot for our community, and it looks like it's going to be nice weather. Just be out there and be safe and all that other sort of stuff. So let's see. We don't have the first Friday openings. Food Truck Friday. We're coming down to our last Food Truck Fridays. This is the next to the last one. We have Becky Bear telling stories, as she is best to do. Tony Tangs is a singer-songwriter, and he's rallying some all sorts of crazy people to come over and sing.
How fun.
Yeah, I think you should join him.
Now I'm like, hey, I want to go.
All righty then. And then it's Improv Theater, Rorschach Pattern 9 is going to be. So, and as usual, we'll have all the food truck guys and arts and crafts and things like that going on. I think even though the weather's a little dismal, it'll still be sort of fine, and I think it's going to clear up a little bit. So Food Truck Fridays have worked out pretty well. I think people are enjoying them.
Yeah.
Up at the Tram, we've got Tom Loker and Wayne Norland, live piano and sax. Technically, art workshops begin Friday evening at 6:30 with Art and himself. He is teaching a thing about lighting. It's a three-part series, and the first one is just sort of general concepts and what can you do with lighting and just some thoughts about lighting. And then the next series, a workshop of it, is about, so you have this idea, and then how do you talk and get it written down on paper so somebody can do it, and then there's the actual doing it of it. So his is a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday thing, but we have a whole bunch of workshops happening on Saturday, which range from Kathleen Harper teaching stage management, which is actually very complex and underappreciated skill, I believe.
Every actor I ever work with, because I work with a lot of them, I say the one person you actually need to pay the most attention to is your stage manager.
Yes, because she's going to remind you of where you were standing 15 minutes ago when you just forgot.
They always have all the information.
Mm-hmm.
They carry everybody's information.
And she's going to share the tips of the trade and like how you write this down so you don't forget it and how you take notes. She will be teaching that, I think, two sessions twice. So you have two opportunities to take that. Bo Anderson will be teaching two sessions on how to be a stagehand. This year, or this group of sessions we're doing at the Juno Douglas High School, so you can learn how to run that stage, where the exits are, how to do the flies, and how to pull the curtains, and just generally be a stagehand, which we're going to need this year for there are no stagehands. So this is a tiny little stipend opportunity. I like to emphasize tiny, but it is an opportunity to get involved in the arts. He will be teaching those two on Saturday, and then his group will join the lighting people about how to actually hang lights and how you hang them up there and get them to point where you want them to point, stuff like that. And then Kari and I are teaching a series on, so you thought you would like to have a concert. We're calling it Producing 101, and just the sort of basics, like start from your idea and get it to completion. And then later in the afternoon, we're going to do all stuff on how to be an usher and how to do the box office and concessions and just sort of the technical stuff that sometimes when you go to the concerts and events, perhaps you aren't really realizing all the little feet that are swimming wildly under the surface.
So many feet. Beautiful, beautiful feet.
Yes. So anyway, it's going to be really fun, and these are all free. This is a free series. So.
That's totally mind-boggling and wonderful to me. I mean, we have people who have been producing events in town, some of you, for over 20 years.
Let's just not talk about that,
Jonah. Over a year.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people with, you know, master's degrees in lighting and like things like that.
Yeah.
And a free, actually, training. It's unbelievable.
So, and I see, you know, I think the community is going to benefit, and a lot of people will have. And I say, and if you've been an usher or a volunteer for a really long time, do come to those sessions anyway, because you can share your tips of the trade, what you know. And also, as we're getting more digitally involved, things are, you know, like changing. I hate that part. Passwords, forget it. Anyway, also on Saturday is the second Saturday market out at the Airport Shopping Center. They always have produce and all sorts of things out there. It's the Seas Skipper's Choice Day Race from Marmion. Is that right? I don't know about that. I don't know. You'll be doing King Lear. There's an international folk dancing. That's last week, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Goodness sakes, what happened to this calendar? So never mind what I said. Go to my calendar on the web, because I think it's updated. We have the ukulele folks doing their thing on Sunday. And then they were the group out at Music on the Fly last Sunday, and it was phenomenal. And they're going to be there again. And, I mean, stuff would happen like grown men in suits coming off and walking into the baggage claim area dancing. I mean, you know.
And you know what? That's worth the price of admission. But again, it's free.
This is a crazy place. Yes. So Music on the Fly is 6:30 to 7:30 every Sunday, and we're going to go on through into the next year, perhaps not every Sunday. So if you'd like to sign up for that, that'd be great. Let's see. I hesitate to go on just because I'm not sure of how accurate my thing is. But have fun fishing and come to the Technically. Oh, next week is also our Grantsmanship workshop that we're having. That one is not free, but it's worth the price of admission. So because it'll teach you how to write grants and help fund some of the wonderful things you're working on. So give us a call it's still not too late. We are up to about 20 people coming from all over the state for that particular workshop. So it's very exciting.
Cool.
Anyway,
people can find out all the full calendar at jahc.org, right?
Yes. And also at ktoo.org, because you guys share calendars with us.
We love that. Well, thank you so much, Nancy DeTourney, coming here to talk to us every Thursday with Arts Up. And speaking of Arts Up, there's actually a Hot Club of Cowtown is coming to town. The Juno Jazz and Classics is bringing them here.
September.
And we are going to give you a little preview of their fabulous music. Thanks so much, Nancy.
Thank you.
Sweet last night, moonlight night, the stars are shining bright. Felt romantic as I went through the gate to fill the lovely date. I went right in, this is what I found. Combed the room and the shades were down. She sat on my knee, Lord, me, that gal, she's killing me, she's killing me.
She's killing me.
Or killing me.
Or killing me.
Lordy, Lord, that gal of mine, that baby's killing me, she's killing me.
She's killing me.
Or killing me.
Or killing me.
Every time I see that gal of mine, oh Lord, she's killing me. Now kill me. Miss Bonnelly, a wife. I should have known better, cause the Bonnelly was not expecting me. I went to the window to see if she was gone with the bathroom window, and she was at home. Bonnelly, that gal, she's killing me. She's killing me.
She's killing me.
Killing me.
Killing me.
Lordy, Lord, that gal of mine, that baby's killing me. She's killing me.
She's killing me.
Killing me.
She's killing me.
Every time I see that gal of mine, oh Lord, she's killing me.
And that's Jazz Hot Club of Cowtown coming to us in September, brought to the fine town of Juneau by Juneau Jazz and Classics. My name is Shona. This is Juneau Afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Tomorrow we have a fabulous show. Joan Pardes hosts. We'll learn about the upcoming star performances that are actually happening tonight and this weekend. Linda Ketchum will offer details about the Sledgehammer 36-hour writing contest. We'll hear about communications classes at UAS, and we'll get a preview of this week's Food Truck Friday, Writer's Almanac, and more on Juneau Afternoon tomorrow, Friday, August 9th. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek at 101.7. Gustavus listens on 88.1. 91.9 serves Hoonah. An Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau, on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Thanks for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon.
When you're working in a country like Syria, you're doing it covertly to keep there from being any kind of public debate about it. To me, that is damaging to our foreign policy efforts.
Just how much of U.S. foreign policy should be secret?
It's Thursday, August.